press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to taste in.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They optioned no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey. Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell. And we're both wearing white t-shirts.
M-O-Y-T. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And y'all, it's another Twin Talk so soon.
Y'all kept saying you wanted it. To quote Meryl Streep at the end of Mamma Mia, do you want another one? Do you want another one? During the end credits medley.
Unreal.
And everyone knows what I'm talking about right now.
Of course they do. Of course they do. Do you think Mamma Mia 3 will feature Meryl in any way?
It needs to. It needs to feature her in the way that, like, the Star Wars movies slowly started adding more and more ghost apparitions at the end. You know how, like, in, like, post-production, they and then added, like, young Anakin. And then they added, you know, Yoda, Luke Skywalker. I need it to be like that.
I love that concept. What if they did what they did for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, where we're flashing back to young Donna? What if in 3, we're flashing back to some, like, liminal space Donna that's, like, between Mamma Mia 1 and Here We Go Again, where, you know, Sophie and Skye are traveling the world. She and is it Bill that she ends up with, or is it Harry? Is it?
I don't know. Okay, wait, it's Harry, Bill, and
Sam.
Sam. It's not Sam.
It's Harry. Harry Bright.
No, I like this idea of a liminal space. It's almost like Giving Fun Home or Cher Show or Summer, the Donna Summer musical, where there's 3 Donnas then. Oh, not Donna Summers, Donna Sheridan.
Oh, period.
The reason we're here today is because y'all wanted more Twin Talks, and that's all.
Dylan. No, y'all, listen, we had 2 pods scheduled for before this moment and both canceled day of, which I know life happens, everything happens, et cetera, et cetera. But this has honestly not happened to us in 5.5 years of doing this, where they both were supposed to happen 2 days in a row, canceled day of.
Yes.
And now we were left with nothing to put out there except everything, aka another Twin Talk, which you all love.
Right.
And there's honestly so much to get into that it's perfectly fine with me.
The timing seems so right because we were just together in New York for a very quick whirlwind weekend. Had to sneak in and see a couple of shows. The timing worked out so perfectly, which we'll get into what specifically we saw. If you were following along on Instagram, you would know. But are you well, Connor? What's going on?
Gosh, I am well. Well, as our Patreon listeners know, and I don't think I've said this on the main feed, unless I did, who knows? I also can't remember anything anymore, but I started a new job several weeks ago and it's been really, really fun. I'm at New York City Center now.
Which is so, that's so been freaking fun.
Total blast. We're in full wonderful town mode coming up, starring Anika Noni Rose and Aisha Jackson. Friend of the pod, Aisha Jackson.
Is she considered a double? I don't think she is, because we did that thing at the second drama anniversary where we brought back 6 fan favorite guests for a check-in. And I don't think we consider them to be double drama guests because those were like literally like 15 minute recaps.
Yeah. Those were like a very special episode vibes. That was so pandemic to be like, we're doing a Zoom show. Oh my God. Remember my original idea for it was that you and I were just going to like record for like 2 hours and have people call in.
Like a radio hour. Yeah. Which would have been super fun, but a logistical nightmare. And it would have required us having a producer, which, by the way, if anybody wants to produce drama, anyways, I'm so happy for you with this new job. It's amazing. And you're at a place that like we talk about on this podcast all the time. And so it's like surreal that now you're actually seeing the inner workings of NYCC.
I know. It's such a blast. I think Wonderful Town is going to be great. I mean, it's directed by Jalen Levingston, who we all know and love from Cats the Jellicle Ball.
Right.
Which, coming to Broadway?
Let's get into this. Let's get into some of the tea. So we've gotten some.
Yeah.
We in a panic moment, posted to ask for some questions. We're going to be like just recapping the weekend of shows, talking about the spring season, theater, pop culture, love, and life. darlings. But yeah, so Cats, the Jellicle Ball, which Sydney Harcourt all but confirmed it's coming back this summer on an episode of Drama with Us, if you were listening closely, it dropped, you know, a website, this glittery cat disco ball logo. And everyone immediately was assuming Broadway. Where on Broadway would it go?
That is the $1 million question. And maybe I'm just foolish to expect a commercial off-Broadway run Titanic style, but who knows? I mean, it was such a hit last year. Like, truly, we still have guests on our show being like, that was my dose. That was my Ring of Keys moment. You know what I mean? So I have a feeling it probably is Broadway, especially considering if it was at an off-Broadway space that they were renting out again, I don't know if they'd have their own social media account, right? Because last year they just did it all through the PACs, the pack.
That, unless it's a true rental, like if they were to go to, I don't know, like think about like Big Gay Jamboree. They were at the Orpheum and Jonathan Larson Project right after, and they both had their own. The Orpheum could be interesting. Right. Maybe not big enough, but
I don't think big enough because you need a huge space. I mean, there was always, can we say this on the pod? There were the rumors of Sony Hall.
Yeah, but that being, felt too big.
It feels huge.
Yeah. Do you remember going for that drag brunch in February of 2020? And we were so far back. I mean, you could hardly even see. I mean, there's some pretty cavernous Broadway theaters, but you know what I'm thinking about it? The Orpheum could really be cool. It feels downtown. It feels ballroom. It feels Pose.
I know, but Dylan, once you see it, you'll know why it needs that huge runway for the piece.
Is there another venue within the Daryl Roth Theater where Titanic is?
I don't know.
How about this? Titanic, transfer it to Broadway. It's a two-time Olivier winning musical now. We're talking to Leslie Marguerite about how much more fun and camp things are in the West End. It's such an Olivier thing for Titanic to be recognized, you know, whereas here, like, granted, it's a huge hit. The Broadway voting audiences maybe turn their nose to it and are like, it's not Broadway enough. Who the hell cares what Broadway is? Oh, Mary is a smash hit on Broadway right now.
Hell yeah. And Cole, James, and Conrad are all back. The OBC is back on Broadway.
Yeah. So is it the whole OBC reunited now?
It is.
Okay. Because no one else left.
The entire OBC.
Okay. Oh, kind fantastic. Fantastic. And okay, wait. So just to close the loop on the Cats thing.
Oh, right.
A Daryl Roth type theater maybe could work though. It's a commercial space, but adaptable.
For sure. I mean, in my head, I'm picturing what Here Lies Love did at the Broadway or what they've done at the August Wilson for Cabaret.
Yeah.
You know, totally putting the money in to revamp a space. But what's interesting is that we knew all those shows were coming like way down the line because we knew that the theaters had to undergo those renovations.
Yeah.
So I found it kind of interesting for Cats to drop this teaser like, hey, we're still here. But then we don't know what's happening yet. You know, are we going to find out about a show closing sometime this summer that, oh, by the way, next June, or probably not June, they'll want to get in for next season's Tonys. Hey, by next April, you'll see Cats the Jellicle Ball on Broadway at blank theater, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so then why not drop a website now to remind people they're around, knowing it's going to be 6 to 7 months down the line? I don't know.
The investors interested?
Yeah.
The producers?
I mean, my fingers were crossed for summer just because Sydney had said, like, keep your eyes peeled. But things change constantly, so.
Yeah, Dylan, did we get any other questions from listeners for today's juicy dose of drama themed theater, pop culture, love and life grab bag episode?
We did. We did. Which, bless everyone who submitted, given the short notice of this little grab bag episode, as you said. Continuing with the theme of Broadway, one of the questions we did get was from Kale underscore Kit Kat, who asked if we could do some Olivier's chat. Truthfully, did not watch them. We were in New York together. We had a two-show day and saw Sondheim's Old Friends and Real Women Have Curves. So we didn't have the chance to watch, but I obviously was reading Connor the Winners during intermission of Sondheim's Old Friends. I think we'd known Imelda won. I think it's her fifth Olivier win.
Wow.
Yeah. And John Lithgow won.
Interesting.
Yeah, his first Olivier. And The Curious Case of Benjamin Button picked up a few trophies, which I'm really curious, not to use the word from the title, about that one. Did we ever watch that movie? Was that like a pandemic watch for us?
Oh, yeah. Brad Pitt, Taraji P, Kate Blanchett.
I feel like you're doing the Ariana DeBose rap, Brad Pitt, Taraji P.
Oh, we'll get into Ms. DeBose later. Mm-hmm.
I know that was like one of the first things when I texted you and I was like, so I think we're pivoting to a twin talk tonight. And you said, great, we need to talk about the DeBose Zegler drama. That was literally one of the first things you listed out as like possible things. Anyway, so that's my biggest takeaways from the Oliviers. That plus the Titanic of it all. I need to go and watch the performances. I did hear there was a Les Mis tribute, which again, is there such an Olivier thing to do than continue to pay tribute to Les Mis over and over and over again?
That's so Olivier coded.
Mm-hmm. And they had like three or four Fontaines singing.
Okay.
I Dreamed a Dream.
Oh, I would sob. I mean, yeah, I mean... Les Mis hits. I'm sorry. It's truly an incredible work of theatrical achievement.
I love this groundbreaking statement. It's like when you and I occasionally remember that Hamilton is amazing.
I know. Well, my theory about that is there was Hamilton mania for that first, say, year. Mm-hmm. And I just like, I put it away. I was like, I can't. I was happy for you, but I ain't reading all that vibes. Mm-hmm. Like, I was obsessed with it. It was everywhere. I got so sick of it that I put it away. And then we saw it a couple years later on tour. And I was like, wait, this is so amazing. The lyrics, the melodies, the story plotting, the transitions, the turntable. I mean,
wow.
If there's one thing those tables are going to do, it's turn.
Yeah. Groundbreaking is so funny.
And in Smash, the musical, Brooks Ashmanskas' character is in pursuit of a turntable for Bombshell. Right. And I couldn't help but giggle about the use of a turntable, because what Broadway show doesn't want to use one these days? I mean, I feel like every single, even plays have turntables now, you know?
Jamie Lloyd used one in Betrayal.
Jamie Lloyd in Betrayal. Dakar 2000 had a turntable.
Jamie Lloyd also used it in A Doll's House.
Doll's House for sure had a turntable. Maybe Happy Ending has one. Is that a spoiler?
No, it kind of is a spoiler. Groundhog Day famously had a turntable that didn't always work.
We're missing such obvious turntables right now, but the fact that Bombshell wanted to use one was so true.
Bombshell, you mean Smash?
Well, I mean, in Smash the musical, Bombshell wanted a turntable.
Yes. Gosh, there are so many threads right now that I want to jump onto, but I loved Smash. So we did hear from a Smash cast member, Bella Coppola, who we stan, saying that her dose of drama was meeting us at the stage door after the show.
I feel like Smash finally coming to Broadway with this cast was so McDowell twin coded. Everything about it was our dreams coming true from 2012. Like, Smash is finally on Broadway using all of our favorite songs. We obviously loved the series so much. We watched it through so many times. We have so many friends in the show, including people who we looked up to from when we were young, like these Broadway stars, and also just friends that we've made through the years. And it was one of the most memorable theatrical experiences I've had in a long time. Just sitting in the theater moments before Smash is about to begin, we turn to each other and we're like, it's finally happening.
Yeah. And we had a freaking ball. I loved it so much. And I even said this afterwards to Bella in particular, you know, so many people love Smash so much. So it's like when your favorite book, movie, anything is adapted and turned into a musical, people are going to come with their pre-established feelings about waiting for specific moments or characters or songs. And I feel like Smash did the amazing thing in that they did not do the series on stage. They did the concept of Smash and the Bombshell musical. And there's like, I think literally just two characters' names that are carried over, but they're not really the characters you knew from the series. And I think that's why it's so successful, because turning a 15, I don't know how many episodes are in the first season, like 15 or 16, maybe, turning that many episodes into a 2-hour musical would not have really worked. And so
no.
Instead we get this incredible zany sort of the producers or the prom vibe musical comedy. And I found it to be extremely successful.
Brooks Ashmanskas can deliver a line like no one else. He is so funny. In Smash, he's playing the director, which it's not the Derek Wills character from the show at all.
As Ramona Singer would say, thank God.
I totally agree. I was like, wait, are they going to have a British character in here to kind of like pay homage to Derek in some way? I mean, Brooks is absolutely amazing in this. Just the physical comedy is beyond. It was one of those moments where I thought to myself, who else could play this role?
Mm.
Like, truly nailed it. And I love, okay, wait, we're getting into Smash spoiler territory, actually. So if you don't want to hear us talking about some of the plotting and characters in Smash, just like tap, tap, tap for like 2 minutes or whatever. But I love that they took the Devor Messing and Christian Borle songwriter duo and switched it from girl and gay, and they went for married couple.
Yes.
I loved that so much because, again, it's like, okay, we're taking the bones of this format, but we're doing our version of it. We're like, okay, British sexually predatory director on the TV show, joyful gay, hilarious director in the Broadway show, girl and gay music and lyrics team on the TV show, married couple on the Broadway show. Do you know what I mean? Like, they really took us, like, they get it was still Smash, but it was the Broadway version of
Yes,
it.
because those dynamics playing out on stage, I thought were much better suited for musical comedy than maybe a melodrama, which the series was, you know? And they still explore like workplace romance in the show and interpersonal issues when multiple people have vision for a musical. But I have to say, it felt like a show, and I felt this way about The Prom as well. It felt like a show that was very much written for Broadway fans and lovers, and it's a treat. You see them at Sardi's. You know, a lot of some of my favorite scenes take place at Sardi's. You see them in New 42 or Times Square Studios, you know.
They mentioned
Yeah,
Schmackeries.
Schmackeries is mentioned. Is this the first time Schmackeries is mentioned in a Broadway show? You know, there's a lot of really cool elements like that. Whereas with on the series, you maybe saw them walking around the theater district, but and this still encapsulates a lot of that. And I said this to you the other day, y'all, as a theater community, we can't do to Smash the Broadway musical what we. What we, and I have said this for years, what I feel like theater fans did to smash the series, which, you know, everyone who's in something, you know, a theater fan working in an industry, whatever it might be, you're often most critical of it. And I feel like Smash was so beloved afterwards. Let's love what this Smash is now while we've got it on Broadway, because it has been a long gestating process. We've all waited and dreamed and seen concerts. And that was that Bombshell concert that took place at the Marquee. And hoped and prayed that Smash would actually make it to Broadway. It's actually on Broadway, and throw away any preconceived notions and just enjoy it.
I totally agree with you. We have to lift this up. We owe it to ourselves to lift this up. You know, casting is perfect. I mean, with between Brooks, Robin Herter is giving you triple threat realness in this. Not only is she giving you the dancing, the vocals, the acting, she's giving you comedy on stage. So we've got Robin, we've got Brooks, we've got original friend of the pod, Krista Rodriguez.
Yes.
In the Devor Messing role. And like you said, Dylan, they're giving her the scarves.
Yes, which I thought was a lovely nod.
Oh my God, so good. We've got Casey Garvin, who did our show a few years ago, originating a principal role. I am so happy for him.
Same with Meghan Keane, who did our show in the fall.
Yes. Oh my God, you're right. Because
And she told us that she wanted to talk about Smash because it was going to be announced soon, but she couldn't on the podcast. And so happy for you, girl. Also a principal role.
period. Personal friend and upcoming friends of the pod, Bella Coppola and Jonathan Savage, professionally known as Jay
Stars.
Savage, star, star, stars. And Caroline Bowman playing Casey's
Yeah.
wife. She's playing Karen. She told us on the pod, and we could announce
Yes.
it, that she's playing Karen in Smash. And it was so fun to hear those songs on a Broadway stage is so right. I mean,
Yeah.
Shaman and Whitman can write a tune, and these are some of their best.
I
Now,
agree. They're like my
there
faves.
is one song from the TV show, and I'm not going to spoil it, but there is one song from the TV show that is not in the Broadway show, and I get why it's not included, but devastated. I need someone to sing it as a bonus track for the cast recording. And I'll just say that because I need it.
You're so funny.
You know the one.
I know it because I also was like, oh, there was one song they didn't include.
Well, because what I lo also loved about Smash was it jumps us. In medias res, as they say, we're not going through the idea, the auditions, the this, the that. We're in rehearsals for the Broadway show and it's coming soon. You know, it's that the stakes are super high. We're like, boom, boom, boom. So, anyway, we probably talked way too long about Smash, but I want everyone to go see it and let us know what you think and support these incredible artists.
Smash is in the fabric of drama, so I think that they were allowed to dedicate a lot of time to talking about it on here. So, Bella, thank you for submitting your question. We loved saying hello to you.
This all spun off from Bella's question or comment, but
Yeah, it meant the world that you spoke with us. To Charlotte, who we love, submitted, some early Tony's predictions. I don't know if I'm mentally ready to give Tony's predictions, but there is one I can almost say without a doubt. I mean, you know, I have discussed the best actress race for in a musical ad nauseum. I think I'm ready to lock in Bet It All on Blonde. And the blonde in question being Sarah Snook, best actress in a play for The Picture of Dorian Gray. Absolutely incredible.
Is it Snook or Snook? Rhymes with Luke. It's Snook.
It is Snook.
Like in the word zoo, Snook. It's not CBS Sunday Mornings.
Has anyone ever said Snook to you?
No. And okay, I guess Sarah has gone on the record now saying everyone in the industry has just been pronouncing it wrong.
Wow. Well, Sarah Snook, I tip my hat to you.
I am 1 million bajillion percent aligned with you that Sarah Snook gave the performance of a lifetime in The Picture of Dorian Gray, and she's winning. She's winning.
And, you know, we've talked about like this idea of like when it's a one person show, they're acting against themselves. Like, it's so different. In this situation, she legitimately was acting against versions of herself that you have to see to believe. It is so, so incredible, compelling, if a little long, but it felt like you were sitting and watching a movie. It really did.
Unbelievable. I mean, I feel it to be life-altering theater. I wish this could run for way longer so that everyone could get a chance to see it, because it's one of those things that has to be seen in real life to be believed and experienced, because it wouldn't play as well if it was filmed and then put out, which I still think it should be filmed in some way to capture like the magic. If they got a really innovative director to get in there and be like, here's how we can still feature the screens and the stage work. Like, but it just is one of those theater pieces that uses visuals, uses sets, uses an actor in the present and filmed pre-filmed content that all feels so authentic to the show. I mean, right. It knocked my socks off. It absolutely knocked my socks off. Sarah is unreal. You said it was like Tatiana Maslany in Orphan Black.
Yes.
Where you forget that it's the same actor performing X number of parts because that's the character. And that's exactly what she did. I was blown away. And I feel like this kind of bends my thoughts about a one-person show, whether they should or shouldn't be considered for the lead actor category, because yeah, sure, it is an event where they're on stage by themselves, but Sarah wasn't alone. Sarah was acting against 26 versions of herself, plus the incredible camera operators and everyone on stage who was making it happen, handing her cameras, cutting between each other. I don't want to spoil any of the bits, but it was probably my favorite play of the season and one of my favorite things I've seen in years.
Favorite
Wouldn't you
play
agree?
Of the season.
Yeah. For sure.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I really loved a lot of the plays this season, but it's definitely up there. I think for more so, it's the performance and the quality of the production for me. But yeah, totally, completely agree. That's a Tony prediction I'd be willing to make. The best actress won. I still can't do it. Best actress in a musical. I still can't do it. Even after having seen pretty much all of the new musicals that feature leading ladies, I still can't do it. All I know for sure is Audra and Nicole. And Megan Hilty, Jen Samard, Adina, Jasmine Amy Rogers, Tatiana Cordova from Real Women Have Curves. I mean, the list goes on and on.
It absolutely does. But Dylan, I have to say, Tatiana in Real Women Have Curves, I'm about to start sobbing talking about her. She took my breath away.
Mm-hmm.
I truly feel like that was a star-making performance. It's in a way like Elle Woods in Legally Blonde, where you're just on this character's journey with them the whole time, and they're on stage almost the whole time. And she just had so much heart. Her voice is stunning. The character just goes through such a journey throughout the show. I would love to see her nominated for Best Lead Actress.
Me too. She was beautiful. I know when I got home and was telling Hunter about it, I was sobbing, describing the plot. Some of the elements of it, the titular number, which I think they should try and perform that at the Tonys.
Oh my God. Well, it has to be nominated for Best Musical in order to perform.
Yeah. So.
And I think it could be.
It definitely could be.
I think we both think it could be.
Mm-hmm. I knew by intermission. I was like, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Y'all have to go see Real Women Have Curves for the entire show, but the titular song moment, Oh my God, I'm going to start crying right now. We both wept during that number. The audience jumped to their feet the second it ended. Mm-hmm. And we both said to each other after the show, I have not experienced that kind of joy. And oh my God, I'm going to start crying right now. That emotional catharsis from a musical since Come From Away.
Yes, it's a similar... similar feeling. It's really, really magical.
Not since Gander.
The whole cast, again, really brilliantly cast production. It's a really great season for musicals, new and revived. Okay. We also saw Sondheim's Old Friends and sobbed. It was an emotional two-show day on Sunday.
To be going through exhaustion, a hangover, and then have to sit in a Broadway theater for a combined, 6 hours is one thing, but then to be so emotionally moved because you're so fragile is another.
I know. Well, Elsbeth wrote in Bernadette, Leia, and Beth, as in Bernadette Peters, Leia Salonka, and Beth Level, White Lotus, as in they should all be on the next season of White Lotus.
Oh my God. Wait, can you imagine Bernadette in the next season of White Lotus?
It'd be perfect. They all would be.
Oh my God. They all would be.
Beth in a Parker Posey type role. Bernadette in a Sritala role. If we're going with this most recent season. Leia as a Belinda type character.
Oh, totally.
She has such a nurturing, caring presence about her.
So centered. Oh my God.
Those three women were so brilliant in Old Friends.
Thank you for submitting that, Elsbeth. And also I'll say, to quote Elsbeth, to see Bernadette Peters on stage singing all of these Sondheim songs, many of which we've known her for but have never seen her do live, probably most of us, was a true privilege. A true privilege.
Yeah, I mean, I cried multiple times, but it's, and I know I'm not alone in this one either, it's anytime you hear Sunday, from Sunday in the Park with George, it frames the first act of the show and Bernadette uttering the iconic line, "Harmony." I was gagged. And you know, I didn't think we'd see her in a musical again after Hello, Dolly. And so it's a privilege. Elspeth said it, and you said it as well. Kyle Selig, Jacob Dickey.
Beth
Level. Yeah. Lots of standouts in this
show.
Oh
my God. His voice is so stunning. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's hot. But they were giving him kind of leading man moments.
A lot of them. I will say the biggest takeaway I have, other than it was fantastic, we're due for a Follies revival.
It's time.
And I know that people were like, enough reviving of Sondheim, blah, blah, blah. Y'all, just do it.
Well, and that was what was interesting about watching Old Friends. I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to go see Old Friends, a review of Sondheim music. It's going to be great. I didn't expect, and silly me, to be as drawn in and captivated by these songs, some of which I've heard hundreds and hundreds of times before. But you really do hear something different in the lyrics. Different in the melodies, depending on how it's interpreted, performed, or just what phase of life you're in at that moment. I mean, Sondheim was a genius. This is, again, another groundbreaking statement today, but it's totally worth seeing, and I highly recommend going to see Old Friends.
Completely agree.
Any other questions?
Oh, yeah. The last two questions are Bravo related, and so I want to save those for a little bit later.
Cool.
But the last show that two shows we haven't talked about was Boop and Streetcar Named Desire, which got to see. I know you'd already seen it. We got to go back. Absolutely incredible. I think it is the end of the road for it, though.
Agree. I know they did it at the Almeida in London. They did it in the West End. They brought it back to the West End. They brought it to Brooklyn. I mean, Paul's going to be busy being one of the Beatles for a while. So I agree with you that I think it's the end of the road for Streetcar. But were you delighted to hear my Patsy Farron as Blanche impression before the show, during the show at intermission, after the show, all night? I'm quoting the line.
Yes. She's great. And, you know, we saw this production off West End at the Almeida. And it just got even better and better. Paul's even sexier and sexier.
Well, yes.
You know, we've gotten to see him a few times in real life now. I mean, you've seen him in this play 3 times. We saw him host Saturday Night Live at the dress rehearsal. So wherever he may be, we're following close behind. I think the next time I see Streetcar, I would love to see like big sets, costumes, the full kit and caboodle, because this was certainly really clarified. Give me the old timey costumes and set and props.
I thought the same thing, especially having seen this version 3 times now. Obviously, I'm able to follow the story, but I love when, most of it takes place in, if not all of it, takes place in the apartment that they're living in. And I would just love to see it, Sydney Brewster style.
Sydney
Oh
Brewstein style, yeah. Oh, and then Boop. We should talk about Boop real
my
quick,
God.
I guess.
Yeah. Y'all, Jasmine Amy Rogers, a debut for the ages.
It's like a Sutton Foster moment, in my opinion.
She's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I don't want to spoil too much about it, but you probably even noticed like her voice, how it changed from when she was Boop, Betty Boop to then all of a sudden when she's not being the star, she's got a little accent to it, like a little Brooklyn. Did you
Yeah,
catch that?
she's amazing. And Jerry Mitchell knows how to direct a female-driven musical, and he knows how to put the heartbeat in the finale. And I felt like he used a lot of his successful bag of tricks in this. His hands were all over it. And I say that with love because Hairspray, Catch Me If You Can, Legally Blonde, Kinky Boots are all some of our favorite musicals. And
Wow,
so,
yeah.
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 And even, Ended on Your Feet. And so, super fun. He was there as well. Jerry Mitchell was there, gave a little speech at the curtain. So the last two questions, our friend Garrison asked us to speak on Kenya Moore's firing from The Real Housewives of Atlanta. I have only just reached season 8, but I'm very well equipped with Kenya and I know this drama, but you're watching in real time. Give us the Bravo breakdown.
Here's what I'll say. This season of Real Housewives of Atlanta is so good. So I'm looking forward to when you finally do reach it. They have great new cast additions. And one of the hooks to this season was Kenya and Portia back on screen together. And their dynamic has been so fun all season. But basically, one of the new housewives, Britt, who her voice reaches levels of nasal that I've never experienced in my entire life. And I feel like we're all kind of just moving past it. But she and Kenya have not even really been beefing, but she's taken everything that Kenya says very personally, and she's like bothered by Kenya. And they got into a bit of a fight in last week's episode. And then Britt was threatening Kenya with like whips and a gun, saying, like, I've got my whips, I've got my pistol. And then Cynthia was being told about it this week, and Cindy goes, wait, you mean like she's packing? I did laugh at that. I did
Cynthia's
laugh at
deliveries are
Cynthia.
great.
Kenya was feeling on the defense, obviously, because Britt was saying she had weapons to use if Kenya didn't back off her. So Kenya obviously took it way too far. And at the launch of the Kenya Moore Hair Spa, she made this crazy speech about when people come for her and try to knock her down, they can't do it. They're not going to do it because who even is this person? Who even is Britt? And then she pulled up these like photos that she had collected from Brit pre-work done, and then sexually explicit images printed out on these boards to flash and show to people. It was really inappropriate, and she took it way too far.
As she tends to, even in the first couple
As
seasons I've seen her on.
Totally agree, as she tends to, but y'all, I am standing by my girl Kenya
But
because
revenge porn isn't right.
I'm not saying what she did was right, but I am saying that I'm standing by Kenya wanting to defend herself against this girl who threatened her with
Yeah.
violence. And we've seen tons of very, very blurry stuff happen on Bravo shows before, involving nude photos and sexually explicit stuff. I mean, all the way back to early seasons of Jersey, they're talking about Danielle Staub's sex tape. On last season of Southern Charm, one of the female cast members sent a nude photo to a male cast member, and he showed it to all the other men on the show. And har, 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 he's a producer on the show. They all laughed it off. So I just think it's
Oh, who
super
did that?
unfair. It was on Southern Charm. It was probably someone you've never heard of,
I've heard the name, but I couldn't
Whitney
picture who.
Sadler-Smith. He's one of the producers of the show.
Oh, it's a man.
He is named Whitney. Yes, a man named Whitney. And he is like a vague drop-in cast member on like cast trips and some dinners, but then he like mostly just functions as a producer. But again, so there has been sexually explicit and manipulative stuff that's happened on these shows before that's never had action pressed against it. In my opinion, for the case of Atlanta, Britt should have been suspended or tabled for making those threats against Kenya in the first place, especially considering they had it all on camera and on mic and they showed it on the show. And then I do also think Kenya should have been suspended for what she did to Britt because that was also inappropriate. I just think that the standards are super whack. Like last season on Jersey, or maybe it was two seasons ago, one of the women smashed a glass against another woman's head and they both got suspended from filming for a week, but they both got to come back. So it's just like, where does like the quote unquote violence, the line for violence?
Well, yeah, you know, like on the one season of, I think it was at the in season seven, Portia was made a friend because of lunging at Kenya during a reunion. But then she was pretty much on the whole season and was prominently featured in the reunion. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, from what I also understand about this Kenya Brit drama is because Kenya's confessionals were pulled, it looks like a one-sided beef and you don't really get to see how Kenya felt about the situation at all. So
yeah, that's kind of interesting that that's what you picked up on it, because although we are missing her confessionals, they did show scenes where she was talking about how threatened she felt by the incident. And there was plenty of footage about all the other women talking about, at least to the point, the episode ended with Kenya showing the photos and we saw the women react to it, but we don't have like the aftermath other than it said at the end that that was the end of them filming with Kenya for the season. But yeah, long winded explanation and answer. I'm sure everyone has turned this off at this point. Oh my God. Just kidding. They love when we talk about Bravo.
Do they? You're so funny. Okay. Then that's interesting. So the last, she'll be back. The last question was from our friend Isabel, who asked us to cast season four of The Traitors. Who are you dying to see on? Okay, initial thoughts are another rep, maybe even two reps from the Drag Race world. I would love to see someone funny like Jujubee on there. Obviously, she would have to be a faithful because Juju could never be a traitor, ever. She's also a friend of the pod, so I'm biased. But because, you know, for other friend of the pod, who was on The Traitors was Peppermint season two. Obviously I would love to see Alaska on there. Oh, Willem. Oh my God. Willem would be great on there. Candy Muse would be great on there.
What about Vanjie?
Nah.
Outside of Drag Race, I mean, I feel like Caitlin Bristow would be fun from Bachelor, Bachelorette.
Yeah. I mean, we saw how successful it was to have Gabby Windy on there this season.
Yeah. And Peter last season, even, you know?
Mm-hmm. Any favorite Bachelor or Bachelorettes that you would want to see on there? I mean, I always loved, like, Claire Crawley would be iconic. She was a Bachelorette that one year.
I am still blocked from her on Instagram.
Yeah.
Which has been much documented on this podcast. Believe it or not, we were talking about Claire on this podcast almost 5 years ago. But, yeah. I mean, the easy answer is Joey Gradzide, who just won Dancing with the Stars. He was a Bachelor last year. He was the reason that I returned to Bachelor Nation for one season. He would be like a golden boy Dylan Efron presence on the show. He'd be an amazing faithful, you know. So I'd love to see Joey on there. I'd love to see Caitlin Bristow.
What about Cheryl Burke from Dancing with the Stars? You know, Caitlin also was Dancing with the Stars alumni, but you know, Cheryl Burke would be great as, I mean, she could be a good trader, I think. I think Sheena would be really good from Vanderpump Rules.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Kenya Moore, the woman of the hour.
Yeah,
be amazing.
Yeah, put a Kenya on there. Obviously,
but
Lindsay.
I love Sheena. Oh yeah, Lindsay has to be on it. Lindsay
Hubbard from Summer House would be really good.
There's an early Southern Charm cast member named Cameron, who she was the narrator of the show for the first like maybe seven, 8 years. That's Catherine.
Oh, Catherine, okay.
But Cameron would be great. I'd love to see her come back, which I feel like Traitors does also have that opportunity to bring back people who haven't been on reality TV in a while, like some of these Big Brother folks and Survivor folks, and kind of revive their reality career. So I would love Cameron for Southern Charm. I mean, she'd be a great faithful, but also maybe a great traitor, because you wouldn't expect that she'd be doing it. I would love that.
I'd love Davon Rogers from Big Brother.
Oh, yes.
I'm hearing rumors of Frankie Grande, which I mean, he'd probably be funny on the show. Keep Nicole Frenzel away from the Traitor's Mansion. Ooh, I loved Vanessa Russo from Big Brother. She didn't win, but many people found her to be one of the great players of that era.
She played hard.
She played really hard.
What about like Orfe?
Yeah, I mean, like, give us some Broadway representation on The Traitors. Like, you got, like, on Celebrity Big Brother in the UK, you have people like Marisha Wallace on Celebrity Big
Yeah.
Brother. Put Michelle Visage in the Traitors Mansion. She
Yes.
would be fantastic.
Allegedly, first contracts went out already.
And like, there was like a Nene Leakes rumor. There's always a bunch of housewives. We haven't named any housewives really other than Kenya.
Oh,
Who else
yeah.
would you want to see? I think
Well,
Heather Gay would be fun.
yeah, I was just gonna say, like, honestly, almost anyone from Salt Lake would be great on there. In fact, I think all of them, including Brittany, would be amazing on
Yeah.
Traitors. Like, even Whitney would do well. I think, like, Whitney, Heather, obviously Meredith or Lisa would be iconic, but Meredith would have to sit at the round table. She can't get up and leave.
I
So,
know. She'd have to actually stay
yeah.
seated. Erica Jayne could be interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Garcelle, she wants to focus on her boy's senior year of school, but she could do this during the summer.
Totally.
Garcelle would be great. Dorit would be fun. I don't have any interest in seeing Kyle on there.
What about Luann? Countess Luann.
I mean, yes, but I want her to be just on Roni again.
That's also what we did when you're in New York. Like, we always have Roni playing in the background. And we finally reached season 10, which is the Carol Bethany season. Wait, what about Carol and or Bethany for Traitors?
Definitely.
Sonia?
Oh yeah, Sonia. Well, she'd almost,
She'd be so
yeah, she'd
funny.
be funny. Bindi Irwin would be kind of fun. Or like Robert Irwin,
Ooh,
who just was
what
head
about
of,
Gus Kenworthy?
yeah, Gus. More gays. Come on.
More gays. Like, I like the idea of, they had Ryan Lochte, who I guess was a reality personality in some ways, but bringing in, like, Olympians, like famous athletes, is kind of fun. Oh yeah, did they also have that guy in season two who quit in the middle of it and they never announced? He was
Oh yeah.
a boxer,
He
right?
was like very emotionally affected by the eviction, or not evictions, the round table stuff.
Interesting.
So fun. I love the show so
The
much. I think it's gonna
possibilities are
run. It's gonna run for
endless.
years and years. Apparently they're doing a celebrity version in the UK, which would obviously be my bread and butter.
I mean, next step is doing a civilian version in the US.
Do you think they will?
They should. Why not? I love the UK one
Yeah.
because they want and need the money. The incentive isn't just like revitalize my career. It's like, no, like, we're in these challenges trying to increase the money pot because we want it. We want the money.
Yeah. Those were all the questions. Thank you to everyone for helping us pad this episode with some amazing content.
Dylan, my dose of drama, White Lotus is over. It has truly brought the nation, the internet, so much to discuss, debate, complain about, gag about for the last 2 months. And I'm so thankful for it. There's nothing like a Sunday night HBO series to bring our nation together, at least for 1 hour every week,
Yes,
right?
yes. And then the hour afterwards on Twitter. It's the only reason to
Oh, well,
keep Twitter at this
yes.
point. Yeah, I mean, my thoughts are just that, like, it wasn't my favorite season, but it was certainly entertaining. And I would rather watch an hour, or in the finale's case, an hour and a half of, an anxiety-inducing, complicated show like White Lotus than a lot of the other stuff that I feel like is out there right now. And so, hats off to Mike White. You did it again. I don't know if the bar was certainly raised, but I was definitely entertained. And my MVPs coming out of the finale were Patrick Schwarzenegger, Carrie Coon, and Amy Lou Wood. What about you?
Okay, those are definitely my three MVPs as well. In terms of acting and character journey, that Carrie Coon monologue was so incredible. Not only just acting, but the content. When the women said, I love you to each other, it was especially Leslie Bibbs, how her voice broke. That just, it broke me. It broke me. That dynamic between the three of them was absolutely my favorite storyline from the season.
And I think it hit close to home for a lot of viewers.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Those
And
friendships that last over a long period of time.
it's really moving. Now, was the Jason Isaacs stuff where he's potentially about to poison his entire family and murder them one of the craziest things I've ever seen? Yeah, I was truly like holding my hands to my chest, like, is this happening? Is this like, and then the twink almost bit it.
Oh. He had twink death and then twink resurrection.
I
Yeah, that stuff, the family annihilator stuff, as I was saying to you during the episode, is not of interest to me. I'm hearing an early rumor about the next season.
Oh,
Return to Europe in Greece for this next White Lotus.
interesting. I
Yeah.
would love if we had like a snowy themed White Lotus season, like a ski excursion on the Alps. Like,
Ooh.
wouldn't that be kind of fun? I feel like we've
Like in
seen
the
them by
Swiss
the
Alps,
beach a
yeah.
lot. Yeah, like, you know, cozy, sexy fireside.
Hot springs, maybe.
Ooh, there you go. Look, I feel like it would be nice to switch it up just a little for
Yeah.
the next one.
I love that idea,
But
actually.
I like Greece. I mean, Greece is would be just cinematically stunning. I thought Thailand was a great choice too. Obviously, Italy too.
I liked Thailand. My issue was that we didn't see a ton of Thailand until later, and it was in a lot of like sort of montage-y scenes. But I guess the
But
same could be
that,
said about the Italian season, so.
and that's the point. It's like these rich people who are going to this stunning locale to sit at a resort. You know, they are always eating dinner at the resort. They're always doing all the
Yeah.
programming. So that's why it was fun when the gals wanted to branch out and, you know, try something else in those couple different scenes. But yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, I ultimately love the season. Patrick Schwarzenegger really can act, which was a
Yeah.
shock. He really
His
impressed
arc
me.
was really good.
We only saw him naked like one time though, which was tough for me. I guess technically twice. So that's a big complaint coming out of this season. And my other like nitpick is just that Parker Posey's character really didn't interact with too many of the other main cast members outside of her storyline. And I just feel like it would have been really funny to see her, honestly, with like anyone else.
Yeah, agree. Maybe it was a scheduling thing. I don't know. Okay, yeah, loved White Lotus, obviously. And then my dose of drama. I did go see Jason Schmidt, friend of the pod, perform in his concert in Pittsburgh. Was it last Monday at this point? I
Oh
mean,
my
time,
God.
what is
Yeah.
time? It was absolutely amazing. I was the there's a 56-year-old woman here meme. But shout out to you, Jason. He put on a phenomenal show. And everyone should go stream his song Close By, which has been stuck in my head ever since.
I'm so sad that I couldn't go to that with you. He truly has like the dreamiest voice. So I'm
I think he's going to be a
jealous.
big recording artist.
And Dylan, there is still so much fun
I
to
know.
come. I mean,
We got
I'm
to continue
already.
this on a Patreon.
And I'll be seeing you because we're going to be going on a bachelor weekend together for our friend Isaac, who's getting married this spring. I guess summer.
May 31st. So, I mean, I'd say it's summer.
So I can't wait. Oh my God, it's going to be so fun. And
So
again,
fun.
can't wait, y'all. Thank you for listening to this episode. We are going to be featuring cast members, creatives from many of the shows we mentioned today, and also from the ones we haven't from this upcoming season, whether it be on Broadway or off. Or who knows, maybe even across the pond. Little tease there.
Ooh.
So, thank you again, y'all. We love doing these trend talks. Thank you for tuning into them. If you love them so much, we do these on our Patreon. So, go to patreon.com/thedramapodcast, or for $5 a month, you can become a member of Drama Plus. All right, got the plug in here at the end.
That's right. Make sure you're following us on all the social media sites that are linked below. Please also follow us on iHeartRadio Broadway. Give us a review. We haven't had a review in a while. Someone should give us a nice new review if you're loving the podcast and you haven't yet. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.
Drama.